This is a first ever for the podcast today, our guest.
Is it?
Well, yeah, he reached out to us to be a guest.
That's true.
We've never had that. That's we true. Ask
well,
continuously.
I think the
You didn't know him prior.
No. I think the important thing here is we asked our audience to send in suggestions and to reach out to us if they or someone they knew would be a cool guest. And Ron Kaminsky heard our call for guests and answered. So thank you, Ron.
So cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. Ron Kaminsky is a certified EOS implementer. He's got a company called Culture Shock, and he has a system within Culture Shock called the Buffalo Concept, which I can't wait to talk to him about. I am a fan of the system that the EOS system that he trains companies in, and I can't wait to talk to him about it. He basically helps businesses and business owners be more efficient and accomplish their goals. And I've heard a fair amount about EOS, and I've actually started reading the book that spawned EOS, which is called Traction, Gino Wittman, and I recommend it. But yeah, and then before that, he had.
So you've read this book that he goes out and trains.
Like so many other books, Molly, I've started it, and I have not gotten very far. Well, actually,
I've read two books this month, Alex.
That's not true.
Is that true? I listened to two books, but you said it was the same thing.
Yeah, it is. It counts.
Okay, so
what are the two books?
Now, these are driving books,
Yeah, that's fine.
Rob Lowe, Things I Only Tell My Friends, which was very good. And then Andy Cohen's something or other.
I'm noticing a trend.
He just spills the dish.
Yeah.
Oh, he spills it.
No, it's okay. So before his current company, he was the head of a company called Studio Think, which was all about high performance culture development. And Studio Think was a company that acquired a company that he started called Corporate Quest. So I think he was at Corporate Quest and then moved to Studio Think when Studio Think acquired it. I could have that totally wrong. I should really know what the heck I'm talking
about.
Well,
maybe
here,
we should just wait until our guest comes and he can kind of fill in the holes that you've created.
Right, the giant mammoth holes that I've walked right into. Anyway, let's get him in here. Hey.
All right. So, Ron, any relation to any Kaminskys in Wycliffe?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Although we're really good readers.
Okay.
My father's one of 10, so.
Oh.
About 40 first cousins on that side.
Wow.
That's an expensive Christmas.
It is. We can't even meet in houses anymore.
Right.
You got to rent out a hall.
So. Do you have lots of siblings?
I have 3 younger sisters.
Okay.
I'm the oldest of 4.
All right.
So he stopped at 4, huh?
He did.
He's like, forget this.
He's like, 10 is crazy.
Forget this.
See how stressed out my parents were.
I, too, Ron. We're almost soulmates. I, too, am a product of... Oh, no, you're a product of 4. I'm a product of 10 as well.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I'm a Brady Bunch family. I've got 6 step family and 4 of my own. So we were 10 growing up. There was 10 of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was it really loud in your homes when you guys were growing up?
I mean, I think any home
was
loud, unless
you're
an
only
child.
Well, 3 younger sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did your parents, both of you, what did your parents do for a living?
So mom didn't work when...
How could she? She had a full-time job.
Right. So mom didn't work until I think I was in college. And then dad worked procurement for Avery Dennison and now Ingersoll Rand, so... He's been an exec kind of all his life.
Mm-hmm. My dad was a dentist.
The reason I ask is because raising 10 kids ain't cheap.
Well, he comes from a family of 4.
Yes, my
dad is a family of 10.
Right. I guess I should have asked what your grandpa does for a living.
My grandfather actually sold life insurance for Western and Southern.
Oh, wow.
So on commission, raised 10 kids.
Wow. But see, it wasn't because they didn't have all the shit we have today.
Right.
So, he paid for the basics.
Right. And when they got a deal on bologna,
no cable.
They ate bologna for a month.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Bam.
Interesting.
Yeah. Welcome, Ron. We were just saying that that you are a first for us.
Oh, really?
Yes, meaning that you're the first one to reach out and want to be a guest, and we're so excited. You answered
our
plea.
Yeah.
We're so excited to have you. Basically, we have to beg and pay people, but.
Well, you can still.
We didn't tell Ron.
You don't want to know what Molly has to do.
For free.
to get our guests to come over.
I want it noted that it's been 20 minutes and Alex has taken it to another level. That's what you always say when I take it to another level.
I know,
so I had to call you.
I would like to. I'd also noted that it usually takes Molly only 9 minutes. Anywho, Ron.
Yes. Welcome, Ron.
Yeah,
thank you.
I have a story to tell you. So, you know about Dan Sullivan and Strategic Coach?
I do.
Yeah. So I've been in that for a couple of years. This is my third year. And every session, so that's this coach thing that I go to in Chicago, mm-hmm. Molly, right? So every session that I go to over there, there's always someone who is an EOS instructor.
Yeah.
Right? And so, Molly, I was talking about the book Traction, right? That kind of started the whole EOS thing, right? Which we'll talk about in a second.
Sure.
But Gino Whitman was a Strategic Coach guy, apparently.
He still is.
Still is.
In fact, I think he's been in 17 years.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the two organizations work well together,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of crossover.
Right.
And so at Strategic Coach, we have our home office, right, where we go to, you know, four times a year.
Sure.
But if you miss your session, you can go to any other one.
Okay.
That's that same session. So there's always people floating in and out. And invariably, there is an EOS guy who comes in that missed his session and is there. This happens every single time. The new guy who is an EOS guy, says that he's an EOS guy and talks about how he helps companies be more efficient and accomplish their goals and all that stuff, right?
Sure.
And then somebody else will say, hey, I just got my own EOS implementer, and it's great. And the two systems, the Strategic Coach system and the EOS system, work really well together. And before you know it, it turns into an EOS discussion that we have to cut off so that we can focus on Strategic Coach instead. And that has happened every single time.
Mm.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought you would get a kick out
Very
of that.
Cool.
You're not in Strategic Coach, are you?
Not yet, although they keep calling. So
yeah.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. So now that I've said about EOS, why don't you tell us, Ron, what EOS is and what you do with it? Meaning you,
yeah,
Ron Kaminsky.
Sure. So I think actually Dan Sullivan, I think, says it the best. He says, you know, his Strategic Coach experience, he kind of calls it the operating system for the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And EOS is really the operating system for their business. And so every business has an operating system. So it's Alex OS or Ron OS or whatever we're running on. And we may just be throwing that together, you know, pieces, parts. EOS is meant to be a holistic operating system to help companies do three things: vision, traction, and healthy. And, you know, how do you get everyone aligned and rowing in the exact same direction on one common vision? How do you get everyone set up in a culture of disciplined execution and accountability against that vision from a traction standpoint? And how do you keep them healthy? You know, so goes the health of the leadership team, so goes the health of that whole organization. And so we think we do those things really well inside of EOS. And I actually came to EOS as a client first.
Hmm.
So we implemented EOS as an operating system at Culture Shock, and it literally changed my business.
So Culture Shock is your business.
Correct.
And on a side hustle. You are a side hustle.
Yeah.
That's what you call it.
So EOS is one of our two offerings inside of Culture Shock. So,
okay.
So myself and another implementer, Kimberly Dyer, are implementers at Culture Shock. We both specialize in EOS. And the rest of our team helps companies compete on culture. And so we do team building events all over the country, mostly with a give back component, charity component. But we also help companies measure and then influence their scores from a culture health standpoint in their organizations to better attract and retain A players.
When you say scores, is that something that you guys have come up with or something that Gina Whitman has come up with? Or?
Yeah, no, it's outside of EOS. It's actually, so we started self-measuring. We created a culture health index.
Alex does that all the time.
And so we felt our clients actually wanted to.
I know that joke had to sink in. It got funnier as it went.
You distracted our guest. You couldn't even finish
this. I lost my train of thought.
Oh, I know. It's what I do.
It's a nice visual.
That was good.
So as opposed to self-measuring, we actually brought on a third-party tool to help us measure culture health and whether or not we're having an impact and moving that needle.
Can you, just for people who might not understand, for our listeners, what is culture? I mean, obviously I know what that means, but what are you talking about when you say that? If to make sure a business is culture.
Yeah, so if you really think about culture, it's kind of like brand, right? Brand is the conversation people, I think, are having about you outside of your organization. Well, culture is the conversation people are having internally about your organization.
Gotcha. I was thinking something totally different, so I'm glad I asked.
So you said that Culture Shock really has two offerings. One is EOS, and one is this culture piece with that comes with this measuring tool,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And do those two services generally work together, or does somebody get one or the other?
Yeah, you know, EOS is actually built for companies about 10 to 250 people, privately held organizations, entrepreneurial spirit in that leadership team. When we get involved and compete on culture, we're working with the larger organizations, maybe the KeyBanks or the Bank of America's, Kroger's, et cetera. So those organizations tend to be a lot larger and more matrix. EOS isn't really set up to help those organizations. They're a little bit too matrix for us. And so we do have offerings that can help them, but I think it's a little outside of that EOS framework.
Culture Shock is for the bigger companies. EOS is for the smaller companies.
Yeah, compete on culture is for the larger organizations.
Compete on
However, culture. We do have plenty of small to mid-sized businesses that leverage us to help them through team building, measuring culture, et cetera. So there is some cross-pollination there.
And let's step back. What do you think holds businesses and business owners back? What are the biggest obstacles that you've seen consistently business owners hitting a wall with?
Yeah, so we think businesses hit ceilings for about five reasons. Number one is
not joining their local chamber of commerce.
Sure, that's obviously that being one of them, of course.
Right. So you really have six now.
Six reasons why businesses hit ceilings, but first is they just get too complex as they scale. And so the message and the structure and our processes just get more complex than they need to be. Second is you get these entrepreneurs that just continue to be the bottleneck in their company and they just hold on tight. They have a hard job of letting go of the vine and delegating down into their teams. So we really help them solve their people issues so that they can delegate to people that really get it, want it, and have capacity to do it. We think companies hit ceilings because they're not doing a great job of predicting their business, so they constantly set these goals that might be unrealistic. And so we set ourselves up for kind of a muscle memory of continuing to miss numbers, and that hurts confidence in the team. And then I think we have companies that just aren't well documented from a systems or process standpoint, and everyone's just kind of trying to do it their own way, which adds complexity and causes them to hit ceilings. And then they're potentially not structured correctly. So we try to help organizations kind of with all five and now six of those reasons for hitting the ceiling.
Yeah.
But That's probably a good starting point there.
And there could be a business that has maybe a couple of those issues.
Oh, sure.
Maybe
or
all five.
Yeah. Yep.
So walk me through it. I hire you, right?
Sure.
And by the way, have you worked with any law firms?
We usually don't.
I don't blame you.
And here's why.
We're a pain in the butt.
Well,
that and...
You know, it's interesting. I think that there's a challenge there. You've got a lot of... So we get involved a lot with organizations that have multiple owners, right? Whether a family business or a practice such as a law firm or mm-hmm. asset management firm. The challenge there is in the EOS world, ownership doesn't necessarily equal leadership.
Right.
And that's hard for a lot of organizations to swallow if I'm an owner and I'm not a leader. But what we find is that dysfunction in these companies actually exists because we mix and match those ownership leadership hats.
Yeah.
And so that's a really hard thing to come to terms with in a in a partnership style business.
So let's say you did work with law firms.
Sure.
And I came to you and said, help me diagnose the reasons why I'm not growing as fast as I want to grow mm-hmm. and what the issues are in my organization. Walk me through what I'm going to see as...
I'm trying to get some free advice here.
Maybe.
Let's do this.
Walk me through what I'm going to see as your process for helping me.
Yeah. So we're pretty straightforward. What we do is we do something called a mini EOS workshop. It's about 90 minutes we spend with you and your leadership team, and it's just really an opportunity for you to kind of take a deep dive into EOS. Is that right for you? And am I the right person to help you through that process? At the end of that, if you guys say, hey, let's move forward with this, usually what it takes is about 3 days over the course of 60 to get that leadership team clearly aligned around the foundational tools of EOS and implement those as well as clarify their vision. And from there, we work with our clients once a quarter and for an annual once a year for 2 days back to back, just to help them come up for air every 90 days. Mm-hmm. How do we do? What do we need to focus on next quarter? Let's solve some big issues and go out and execute for another for another quarter. And so most of our clients we're working with about 10 days over the course of 2 years. Some stay longer because they like the third party facilitation and the accountability that comes with it. But we work in a pretty unique way. We don't require any of our clients to sign contracts. Basically, at the end of the day, if you loved what happened, great, pay us. If you didn't, you don't owe us a dime. You have no obligation to continue to work with us.
Is anyone too small?
We can get too small. We say 10 to 250 employees, but I will say there's outliers on both sides of that. You know, I'm working with a couple startups right now that are just two-person teams, but... Mm-hmm. They've got some big visions for that organization. So, you can be too small.
It's an amazing amount of confidence that you have in your abilities that you're going to stake your time on whether your clients feel and see results.
Yeah.
Right? How long would you – that's unusual in a consultant.
Yeah, I actually think that's one of the reasons why we're growing as fast as we are. I think it's, you know, we're kind of the anti-consultants out there. We're not trying to be a leech. We're trying to create independence as fast as possible. You know, our growth model is you telling 10 other companies they'd be crazy not to work with us. But it also kind of gives me peace of mind that, hey, we got to earn our keep every time we're in that room.
Right. That's fantastic.
I would like to note something for the fans that are listening, that Ron is drinking a Dewey coffee from the popcorn shop. We'll be tagging the popcorn shop in this episode.
We were thinking of changing the name of this podcast to ADD with Molly and Alex, and this is why. So you've explained what I, as a client of yours, would see and when and how I would pay for it, which is great. Any success stories that come to mind?
No.
No.
Molly is in rare form today, Ron.
She's reading my mind.
Oh, my God. Well,
goodness. I told you we're so family. So brother and
sure.
sister.
Yeah, we've had a lot of success stories. One of our clients won the Weatherhead 100 last year. Like, won the thing. I think we had three in the
Why
top 12.
Because you did.
Because I'm in the weather.
All
right. Just got it. Yeah, we just got it.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
We've had I just had a client hit their 10-year target in 4.5 years. Mm. So average growth rate right now is sitting around 22% for my clients. Now, I'm sure our economy's helping with that.
Yeah.
But,
get a little
for that to be the average, that's
yeah, that's great.
22%.
They're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you find it difficult? Have you had any difficulty with clients adopting your system because they were so set in their ways?
Sure.
And what do you do about it?
You know, one client in particular fought tooth and nail the entire process because they could do it better, stronger, faster.
Yeah.
And now they're our biggest advocate because they say, just listen to Ron, as opposed to fight him. But I think your skeptics in your business are actually your biggest asset, because when you win over a skeptic on a team, everybody takes note. And I think we shy away from them and we don't start change in organizations mainly because of skeptics. But if leveraged correctly, they're the ones that help us get to that tipping point in an organization where we can positively affect culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever advise your clients on staffing issues where, for example, the client may be on the fence about whether they've got a good team to begin with?
Sure. You know, we obviously don't make any recommendations, but what we do help them do is hold up the mirror and say, hey, is this right person for your organization? Are they living your core values? Are they cut from the same cloth as you? And are they in the right seat? You know, do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have capacity to do that job well? And people are only going to have two types of people issues. You know, we're going to have wrong people. They're not cut from the same core values, but they may be a real high performer for us. So they're a cancer to that organization. Or they're in the wrong seat. They are right people. They live our core values.
Right.
They just don't have what it takes to operate this seat on the accountability chart, so maybe there's another option in that organization.
So you just bring up some things that maybe make them think themselves and come up with like you were saying, you don't make the decisions, but you certainly provoke the conversation within them to take a look at, you know, their business and see who they want to move or get rid of.
Yeah, no one's coming to us because everything is unicorns and rainbows, right? They've got some issues or else they wouldn't be seeking some help. So
Everything's unicorns and rainbows at my office. So
that's right.
That's why I'm not seeking you. Or at least we see rainbows.
I think that there is always a point in time, you've probably seen this, where the founder realizes that they are their own company's liability, bottleneck, worst enemy, whatever you want to call it. And I definitely reached that point. And it's such an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. It almost requires something catastrophic to happen or something, you know, just unexpected or something terrible, because the narrative, unless you're that rare leader that just is humble from day one, right, and knows how to check their ego at the door from day one, and that I think is a rare leader. Most of us do have a narrative that we come to work with, which sounds something like, well, I know I must be doing something right because, right? And I mean, so I've had this firm for 6 years now, and it in many ways has exceeded all of my expectations years ago. And if you would have told me that I'd be hitting the numbers that I'm hitting now, if you would have told me that a couple of years ago, I would have said, you know, maybe 20 years from now, but not in two, three years. And when you reach success in some parts of your business, that feeds that narrative. I must be doing something right. But then when you see the problems that you are causing, or at least not fixing, that's a different narrative, but it requires that first narrative to step aside. Yeah. It requires you to really have that humility and the ability to check your ego. And that's something that I think often, and you tell me if this is your experience too, Ron, it often requires something to knock your ego off, right? You know,
big time.
Is that your experience?
Sure. I mean, that's how I came to EOS, right? I mean, I'm the crazy visionary with 20 ideas before breakfast, and 19 of them we shouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
But
right.
I thought because I own the business, I'm also the right one to run that business.
Yeah.
And until I realized that's not my unique ability. My unique ability is the ideas, be the face, be the voice
right.
of the business, but don't run the day-to-day operations. Delegate that to someone who has that unique ability to do that.
Right.
Until I kind of let go of that vine, did I not, you know, our growth has been incredible since I've let go of that. But that's your baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I probably work with a dozen family businesses right now where we're trying to hand the business off to the next generation. And these people live and breathe this business still and know that they have to let go.
Right.
And what we find is this structure and this space we kind of create for those teams and those owners in large part allows them to let go, even though it's a really emotional thing to do.
Right.
You know, we've seen tons of tears in that room, anger, you know, happiness, tears of joy.
Is it something that, you know, you were saying you went through it. Is it something that people have to, like quitting smoking, you got to want to quit smoking?
Yeah, this is not something you...
You're not pushing it on. They have to do it in their time.
Yeah. You've got to be committed to this. You can't be interested in it. And usually people are coming to us because they've tried it on their own. This isn't their first rodeo. They've tried to delegate or let go before, and it hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that there's an issue. They might not be able to put their finger on it, but they know there's an issue. And we just kind of create the space for them to work through that with the leadership team.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and this is getting back to traction. This is a system that has been employed across the country. Thousands of business, 12,000 businesses. Is that what it is? Something like that.
Yeah. We have about 6,000 companies running EOS right now with an implementer.
Okay.
And we've got about probably 10 times that, about 50,000-60,000
okay.
using EOS tools.
Yeah.
Either on their own or.
Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the things that we talk about in coach with those guys is I've read the book, you need an implementer, you know? And they constantly talk about how much farther they get because it takes so much time and focus.
Yeah.
How much farther they get when they get an implementer involved.
Yeah, I'd say over half of our client base has tried to self-implement
right.
and has ended up asking for some help.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually not a bad thing because it helps them realize what kind of a commitment this really takes
right.
for this to work.
Yeah, and I was thinking too, I mean, I would imagine that one of the values or one of the things that you bring to the table is focusing the leadership's attention 4 times a year, getting them into a room and saying, okay, for the next day, you're not working. You're not going to be practicing law. You're not going to be practicing dentistry or whatever it is. You are just going to be talking about vision and talking about your processes and your culture, right? I mean,
we want you working on your business, right. not in it for a day, a quarter, right?
Yeah.
Together, collectively,
yeah,
with some help to stay focused on that. And if you know, we're built as an organization or as a society just to stay shallow and to jump from task to task to task. And if all we're doing is firefighting, no one's moving into that fire prevention mode
right.
and thinking longer term as an organization. So we just want to create that space.
Yeah. Good. Good stuff. I did want to ask you, in terms of one of the things that is on your website is highly effective meetings, right? I have some tools that I use to make my meetings highly effective.
And are they?
I think they're pretty effective. I don't know about highly.
Can we bring on the team?
I think they would agree that we have pretty effective meetings here. How do you help teams have highly effective meetings?
What do you need at a what do you need at a meeting to make it highly effective?
Well, first, I think start on time, end on time. Every time. Like, we treat it as sacred in our business. And we, you know, we practice what we preach. We eat our own dog food. So we don't ask our clients to do something we're not doing. So we start on time, end on time. The meeting's sacred. You can miss it for two reasons, like vacation or death, and it better be yours. And we want to honor you while you're on vacation. So when you're there, you're present. We meet for 90 minutes a week, and that concept of public accountability, did you do what you said you were going to do last week, has got to be present. The concept of people being engaged in solving your most important issues, not just a reporting kind of environment where, and we're not getting stuck in these discussion loops. We actually need to make decisions on things. So that whole concept of, you know, the roads of the world are paved with squirrels that couldn't decide. Like, how do we get people off of this discussion merry-go-round around their most important issues, stop kicking the can and solve some stuff? And then at the end of these meetings, we actually rate the meeting. Everyone in the meeting's got to rate it, scale of 1 to 10. And if it wasn't a 9 or a 10 from you from an effectiveness standpoint,
why not?
You got to give a reason why.
Right.
And so
I love that.
That, you know, if that meeting was sucked for you and it's a 4, then it's a 4, right? You were on the phone the whole time. You were late. You didn't do anything you said you were going to do last week. We didn't stay focused on our most important stuff. That was a waste of time.
Ron notices that I've been on my phone a lot. That's why he said that. You know that, right?
It's research. Uh-huh. It's research.
I am.
On your also... Oh, this, I don't know if this is on your website or if this is a speaker topic, or maybe it is both, but process-driven business, right? So your quote earlier about working on your business instead of in your business, Michael Gerber, right? The E-Myth Revisited or whatever. I love that quote.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that every business which does not have the senior leadership step away to just think about working on the business, and in fact, probably more than just 4 times a year, like as often as possible, stop working in your business and just work on your business. Process has always been a challenge for me.
Super sexy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trap that I fall into consistently is I think I know what makes for a good policy or a good process. One is make it collaborative, right? Don't just kind of say, this is our new process, now go follow it,
right?
Get people's feedback, get some buy-in. And in fact, I've always felt that if you can get the people, some of them to actually write their own processes, that'd be great. They'll have some emotional resonance, they'll have some investment. But invariably, we all go back to working in the business, or maybe we're still working on the business, but on different parts of the business, and it sits on the shelf.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you, what's a good way to have the processes once created actually sink in?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is recognizing that process is actually sexy. I mean, what's sexier in a business than everyone doing something like the right way, the best way. And so that concept, a lot of people look at process and think, you know, that's painful. I don't want to spend time doing that.
Yeah.
It's all in my head.
Yeah. Well, like, it's not what's bringing the business in.
Right. That's not scalable. Right. We're not scalable though, when this stuff is sitting in our heads. So we take a really entrepreneurial approach. We say, listen, we don't want to create a 100-page SOP manual on here's how we execute certain process in the business.
Right.
We just want to document the 20% of your process that yields 80% of your results. And you can humanize all the exceptions in there. So there's a lot of room for autonomy for people.
Yeah.
Especially if you have right people in the right seats. But I've seen a lot of companies go on these documentation sprees, and then the process still doesn't get followed.
Right.
So we use a methodology called FBA, or followed by all. And so that concept of anyone that touches a step of this process gets trained on it. We measure on the right scorecard to make sure it's being used. And we hold people accountable to that. So when it's not being used, the expectation isn't that 100% of your people use 100% of your processes 100% of the time. The expectation is that it's the exception, not the rule, when it's not being used. And we're immediately trying to solve the real issue as to why that's happening.
Yeah.
Either, hey, we didn't train on it, or we didn't make it clear enough, or the process isn't working. And so we need to create an environment in the organization for people to be open and honest to say, yeah, this is too cumbersome, it's too complex.
Right.
Let's simplify this thing. So it's one thing to go document everything. It's a whole other thing to be intentional about getting that followed by all. And quite honestly, if you guys as leaders in your organization are exempt from following the process because those don't apply to me, the owner, right, then we're teaching everyone what we really value in the business. And so we got to lead from the front.
Right.
From that perspective.
Agreed.
Yeah. Other than the training with specific businesses, you also talked about being a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Are these Be a Buffalo, which obviously is my favorite. I don't even know what that means, but I love it. highly effective meetings. So these might be things that you would go to a group of people. They have not hired you to do this entire process.
Yep.
This is just maybe a topic you would cover at a lunch, or you know where I'm going with this, obviously, because since that's my job and that's what I do is book all these speakers. So you do that as well as?
We do, yeah.
Okay.
So that Be a Buffalo one is actually, the Buffalo is our mascot, and it's actually our first core values to be a Buffalo. So the story goes that buffaloes on the Great Plains as a herd would charge into storms knowing that they're going to see blue skies faster, and cows as a herd would essentially run from the weather, essentially guaranteeing they're going to spend more time in pain. And so that concept of charging into your storms as an individual, company, department, whatever that is, we think we know how to help companies do that. And so that whole concept of stop kicking the can down the road on your most important issues and let's solve some stuff here resonates with people.
I totally agree. And in fact, I got so excited about Ron being here that I had a tattoo of a buffalo put right on my arm.
I totally
believe
that is awesome.
I had a buffalo, but it's not an appropriate place to show it. You got engaged. Congratulations.
I did. Thank you.
Yes. Do we have a day yet?
June 22nd.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's awesome, Ron.
Thank you.
Nice. Yep. Congratulations.
I'm excited.
Ron,
that's the first step.
Yeah.
You donated your property for firefighting training, firefighting training.
Yeah. My neighbors loved that.
Yeah. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So
where do you live now? You're in Bay Village.
I live in Bay Village.
Okay.
And I live on a street called Bayview. And, so we ended up buying the property across the street from us because we love the street, but we just outgrew the house. You're trying to merge two families in this relationship. So,
you're going to be a Brady Bunch family too?
We are.
Oh,
yeah.
So what will be your total?
We'll have three total.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
two 14-year-olds and a 12-year-old.
You have twins?
No, has a 14-year-old daughter. I have a 14-year-old son.
Okay.
I have a 12-year-old daughter. Yeah.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, it's lots of hormones floating around that house.
Yeah.
I know it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we bought the house across the street to do a tear down and to build a new house. And before they tore it down, I donated it to the fire department, and they used it for a good month.
Wow.
Doing drills and smoking the house and
How cool is that?
Dragging out these dummies.
Oh, I mean, my gosh. Yeah, I'm sure your neighbors were super pleased.
They were super excited to see fire trucks out there for a month. Yeah.
Did you clear it with them first at all or run
no,
it past
not
them?
Really.
Are they paying some of the taxes?
In retrospect.
Right.
Yeah. No. Oh, that's so cool, though. I never even knew that you could. Could I donate my house and then they could rebuild a new one? Does that work that way?
No.
No?
It doesn't work that way. Right. Okay.
But do you get any kind of tax credit for it?
You know, I thought I did, but unless they burn it to the ground, that's not the case. And they don't burn them anymore because of the EPA. So there's all kinds of they got to do so much prep work that they don't burn them anymore. So they just use them for search and rescue and all
like
that
knock
stuff.
Down doors.
Yeah,
and
cut holes in floors.
Yeah.
And
okay, can we talk about this point? On the day you resigned from your job,
yes,
your then wife says that she's pregnant with your first child.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Right.
Is what you said.
Yeah. In fact, if that didn't happen, I probably don't succeed as a business.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was almost 15 years ago.
At least you had a reason to make sure that this,
sure.
this next step was a good one.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah,
did she know you were resigning?
She did.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But we didn't know we were pregnant until after the fact.
Wow.
A few
that's
hours
a
after the
day.
Fact.
That's a good motivator.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You are a meditator, true. Or
true.
False. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about that. What's your practice?
Well, so my fiance is a just finished her yoga certification. Mm-hmm. So we have a little room off of a master bedroom. And so I use my Headspace app mm-hmm. and I do a little,
can't do it.
Kumbaya.
Can't do it.
You can do it.
So I think I wouldn't do it without the app. I don't think I'm disciplined enough to do that. But
I spent an entire drive to Maryland. All right. 7 hours that I was alone by myself and just could not get into my head alone. I mean, there are just a million other things going on.
I think most people...
I even said, just I turned the radio off. I'm like, I'm just going to stop thinking and see what comes to me. And no.
You're not supposed to stop thinking. You're supposed to just notice what comes up.
Tons of, everything
right,
comes up.
Right, but it's amazing. I think... I meditate. I try to meditate every day, and I was using the Headspace app for a while.
Okay.
Puttycombe, is that his name? The Australian guy.
Yeah. His voice is so
soothing.
Oh man, it just makes it feels like a hug.
It does.
I'd need maybe Kevin Love could do it for me.
They probably have.
I could change the voice to a Patrick Dempsey maybe. Could.
But it's amazing how much you learn about yourself and what your brain does when you're not forcing it to do stuff. Just by listening and noticing the thoughts and trying not to follow the thoughts, right? But the thing of it is, Molly, I think you could do it in small bursts. And with Headspace, I think it was 10 minutes for 10 days initially, right?
It's only 10 minutes.
And then
I couldn't even – I was so busy today I couldn't tie my shoes. Look, I put them on and I just realized I never tied them. That's – I don't have 10 minutes to get to know myself, for God's sake.
How long have you been meditating?
It's been a few years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you...
I see a bromance starting.
I love it. I say all the time, it was a total game changer for me.
It is.
In what way? Like, what way did it change your life?
I will answer that question. Did you find it to be a game changer for you?
I did.
You go first.
So I don't know how to describe it, but I feel like I can almost see the stressful times of my life from the outside as opposed to being in it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know Tara Brach at all? She talks about that concept as She's a meditation instructor. She wrote a great book called Radical Acceptance, which I recommend to everyone. But she talks about this idea of living your life either above the line or below the line. And below the line, above the line is where you are able to see what you're doing before you do it and see why you're doing the things that you're doing and see what motivates you. And being below the line is when you're just doing it.
Yep.
Right? Unconsciously. You're just living. You're just going. And so
is that bad to be that way?
Well, that's part of meditation is there's nothing good or bad. It's all non-judgmental, right? There's no good or bad. There's just it. The game changer for me was I think is kind of what you just said is being able to go above the line and not associate with my thoughts and my emotions, my anger, my frustration, my stress, whatever, and instead, like, separate yourself from those emotions and see them.
Why do you want to? That's what I don't understand. Well, would you want to? Like, that is your life. You're living it.
It's for one thing. For me, what was really valuable is that it allowed me to be less reactive. Right. So my kids, for example, or, you know, a judge in court or a client would easily be able to trigger me into doing or saying something. Whereas after practicing meditation for a really long, probably a couple months, I was able to like create that space and create a pause where I wouldn't react right away. That was one thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And
move on.
And the other thing is it's really helped me.
I'm bored already.
And here's why I think you could really benefit from it. It's really helped me with attention and focus.
Gotcha. You want to medicate me. You want me to put me on. I love my brain. I love my ADD self-diagnosed. I love me just the way me is.
I'm not saying you shouldn't.
I'm going to change my brain. That's where all my great ideas come from.
No, you're not
going to
change your brain at all. You're going to learn it about it more and see what it's doing. Anywho, I think it's time for the lightning round.
Oh my gosh. I have new questions. I'm so excited. So this came out of my stuff an hour drive. My new question.
That's fantastic.
I listen to my brain.
Yeah. All right. Well, Molly, why don't you
go
first?
And this is a picture of D.C. because I accidentally took a wrong turn to Maryland. And voila, there was Washington, D.C.
Look at that. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. So, Ron, what are you binging?
That's on TV right now?
Yeah.
Oh, we just finished Ozark.
Oh, I
love Ozark. Do you love it?
Yes. I'm also feeling like I wouldn't know what to do if I came into some cash.
Like you want to launder some money?
Oh, my.
Wait, did you just finish season two?
Yes.
What'd you like better, season one or season two?
Season two.
Yeah.
Okay, I might have to I think I just kind of lost it in like the third or fourth episode, and I just couldn't get through it.
Have you watched the Fargo?
I haven't.
If you like Ozark, you'll love Fargo.
Okay.
Not just the movie.
Good,
I was looking for something else. You'll love it. Shout out to
Jacques from Flow Vodka because he had suggested Yellowstone with Kevin Costner.
Mm. Okay.
It's on Paramount, which used to be Spike. It's on regular cable. It was phenomenal, and I want to move to Montana. Yes, we also place in Montana.
Interesting. You meditate
gorgeous
out there.
now I could be a buffalo out there.
Yeah.
So it was a great, if you're looking for a binge, I highly suggest Yellowstone.
Okay.
A perfect day for you is?
Oh.
I like that one, Molly.
Thank you. You're going to like
that. I love the water, so we've got a little beach access there at the end of our street, so starting the morning off on a paddleboard out of the water.
Mm.
Who doesn't like brunch with the fam?
Right.
So, brunch with the fam and, we're probably going out to a nice dinner and no kids in the evening.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. We know what that means. Alex, inappropriate.
What's a perfect day for you, Molly?
I'd have to meditate on that. I don't know.
All right.
A movie, a good dinner and a movie, popcorn, my family, having all my family with me. Yeah, what about you?
A perfect day for me, and we're saying perfect, right? Not just good or cool.
I'd be in New York City, too.
A perfect day for me would involve some skydiving, other speed sports, hanging out with my kids and my girlfriend, and some sort of world travel. So all of this would happen in, like, Rome.
That's a big day.
That's a perfect day.
You're thinking way bigger than I was.
Well, she said perfect.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
I didn't listen.
And here, I just went to the movies. If I wasn't a
EOS implementer.
Life coach. Not life coach.
No, not life coach.
If I wasn't the founder of Culture Shock, what would I be?
I think I'm some coach. I love working with kids. I think I'm coaching football or wrestling or something along those lines.
Okay.
Just watching kids do things they didn't think were possible. That's pretty awesome.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And my last one is...
Hang on, Molly. If you weren't an executive director, what would you be? Executive director of the Chagrin Valley Chamber.
I'd be a morning show host. Like, have my own show. It's coming.
I could see
I'm just
that.
Not there now, but okay. What would you be?
A best-selling author.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the last one is one song I hope I never hear again.
Now it's going to be, like, burnt into my brain.
That's a suggestion.
What about that, remember that Friday song?
Yes.
I can't even sing it.
We don't want to, but that was a catchy one.
Oh.
Yes, agreed. I think mine would be that he was from Hong Kong, I think, and there was a dance to it.
Oh, Korean?
Yeah, and there was a dance to it.
Gangnam Style.
Yeah, Gangnam. If I never hear that, it's going to be a good day. Alex, you got one that comes out to your head?
Gosh. I'll think of one in a minute.
Aren't those good, Alex? Are you proud of me?
Well, the problem with that last, I liked all of them, but that last one.
I could have gone so many genres on that.
Yeah. Don't make me. No, those are mine.
No, I'm just saying, the thing about that last one is now I'm thinking of the Friday song. You
know? Well, actually, I'm thinking of It's Friday Night, but that's not the one you're talking about. But I know it's one you're talking about.
But I do think that this is a massive upgrade to your other questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, nicely done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, see?
Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
Okay.
Especially since I could never remember my other one.
Keep bringing that piece of paper.
I'm going to put it right in the drawer.
Yeah. Ron, you're on a desert island.
Yes.
Shipwrecked for a minimum of 3 months.
Devastated.
3 months.
Could be there.
Your family.
You might be there the rest of your life. You might be there for another week. You have no idea. But you know it's somewhere between 3 months and forever. You may bring with you any single author's entire bibliography. Who is the author?
I think it's Malcolm Gladwell.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
Outliers, Tipping Point.
Really keeps your keep you thinking there on that island.
I mean, you got to be prepared for when you get off.
Yeah.
You know, think big.
Yeah.
Nice big long clarity break.
Yeah. Do you listen to his revisionist history podcast?
I don't. I've been doing a lot of Tim Ferriss lately.
But Tim Ferriss is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that revisionist history, it's like a book every
week.
Yeah,
check that out.
You know, it's like the same style and the same, you know, stories. It's amazing, actually, how deep he drills into these stories and still churns them out every week. Malcolm Gladwell's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Same shipwreck. Same desert island.
It's a bad ship, man.
I know. It was supposed to be a three-hour tour. Same amount of unknown periods of time. You may bring with you any single musician's entire discography. Who is the musician?
Oh, man. We just saw Elton John in concert, but I would say I got to go with Rolling Stones.
Interesting. Good choice. Yeah. Lots of there's a big discography there. Lots of songs.
There is. I think I was thinking variety by the time we you know, if I'm there for that long. Mm-hmm. Right. What about you?
My book my author choice is Kurt Vonnegut. Mm-hmm. And my music choice would probably be Fish or the Grateful Dead. Be a toss up. It's a lot to listen to here.
I don't read.
No, I changed that. It'd be Bob Dylan.
Oh, no, I think I said the Bible.
You did say the Bible.
And I don't know who I said for music.
Was it Billy Joel?
It was definitely not Billy Joel.
Was it the Beatles?
Well, I mean, we're not going to go through 800 things to...
No, I don't remember
who it was. How are you going to remember?
You're right. The next lightning round question is, giving myself time to remember what it is.
It's the one.
What is an embarrassing thing about yourself that no one else knows?
Oh.
That is the exact reaction we get.
Well, that,
100%.
Here's,
I love it.
Here's
I
what that
it.
Tells me. Here's what that tells me.
That I have
me.
One.
Nobody listens to our podcast until the end.
I'm cool with that.
That's what it tells me. Because it's the same question every week. So I don't know why people are shocked.
You know, Pam Turos, our last guest, she had listened to a number of them. She came prepared.
Oh. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, so I grew up totally petrified of, like, public speaking. Petrified. Yeah. To the point where I would throw up, make myself sick, not go to school. I mean, all of those things. I ruined two plays in grade school. Like, I was,
oh my gosh.
I was totally petrified. But I was mildly dyslexic. And so all the speaking when you're growing up is reading in front of other people. So when you can't do that fast in front of people, then you're just petrified. So right. It wasn't until college and I could actually start speaking on things I was passionate about and having a conversation with people did I realize that, you know, that was kind of...
How funny.
Almost a unique ability, but I was terrified of it.
Hmm. Huh.
That's the most common fear among Americans, but not so in other cultures, but Americans
really?
Fear public. They fear it above death and snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something about, they say, that's primal about you standing in front of people with all these eyes looking at you, almost like you're in like the Sierra or the, you know, the jungles with all these eyes looking at you.
I'm
very vulnerable.
I'm obsessed with doing that. Like, I don't think about it. I don't.
Yeah.
I love talking in public.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me anymore.
Now, yeah.
But
that's
I'll tell
funny
you,
that you
it
went
was,
into that.
I was petrified.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I skipped one. What is the routine or practice that you do consistently that you've gotten the most mileage from?
I think it's the journaling. I think
Oh, bromance. Did we talk about that?
we have a lot in common.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When I don't do it, I don't have a focused day.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I can't start the day off writing
so
a few things
off.
Down. Yes.
And always. You end it.
I do both. Yeah, I do. I journal in the morning and just before I go to bed.
See, that's much more discipline than I am. I wish I had the discipline to do it at night.
Am I going
to
make your journal today?
Yeah, actually, I think you will. Yeah.
Yes.
well, when you journal, is it open-ended or is it like a series of questions that you ask yourself or both?
Well, I heard a speaker a while ago talk about, hey, when you journal, this could actually be something you leave for your kids. Like, so don't write about the bad crap. Like, everyone has to. But write about what you're grateful for and what went well and, like, the things that you're working on or thinking about. And so I try to do that intentionally because I do want to be able to look back and be appreciative of those things. Hmm. But it's also to think about, like, the forward-facing stuff. I need, you know, it's just, if I'm putting pen to paper, I'm solving something or somethings. working. Because, you know, I don't know who, I think it was Peterson said, you know, you only really work things out if you're talking them through with someone or writing something down. Mm-hmm. So I think in general, I'm trying to solve some stuff that, that's going on in life or business. But I also kind of want to let the kids know, like, once they're old enough to care that, hey, this is kind of what dad did. Blah, blah, blah.
Can I comment on that for a moment?
No.
So, I would do a couple things for you to consider. And these have been really meaningful to me.
Yeah.
So number one is, I would definitely create a set. Do you journal on paper or on
paper?
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would get a second journal that you don't want your kids to see or don't plan for them to see. So you could write down all the bad shit too. Cause that, there's a lot of value in writing and just complete free flowing stream of consciousness that includes, you know, your stresses and your concerns, your worries, your fears. Right. Yeah. And in fact, I'm sure you've experienced this. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but like going back and looking at the things that used to scare the shit out of me, the things that I was so stressed out about, that I was paralyzed with fear about them. And then looking back and going, man, none of that happened. Yeah. That is really informative.
Yeah, I could see a lot of
it. And powerful, I would
think. That's going to be the more interesting book, too, when you're done, right?
Right. So then the other thing I was going to say is put in a few questions in there, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think you already are by, like, telling yourself to record things that you're grateful for. Mm-hmm. That's one of my questions, right? Mm-hmm. But then at the end of the day, I've got two or three questions, and it doesn't take more than a couple minutes. One of them is, what's a problem you're trying to solve? Hmm. And there, I've talked about this on prior podcasts. There's a lot of science, and this is definitely true anecdotally for me, to support the idea that you prime your subconscious before you go to sleep.
Yes.
So you put down, you write down a problem you're trying to solve and just write it down and then let it go and go to sleep. Hmm. And I swear your subconscious works on that problem and you wake up.
So let me ask both of you, where are you when you, and you have both have kids, like where are you when you're journaling? Like, are you in bed? Are you in the bathroom? Are you at the kitchen table? What do you require your surroundings to be to journal?
Yeah, I'm in my home office or in my office before people get in. You know, so I think that I agree with this whole sleeping on it thing because I do something called clarity breaks, and so I do those every other Thursday for 2 hours, like 5:30 a.m., 7:30 a.m.
In the morning?
Yeah. Oof. But I'll do that in my space because I've got a whiteboard. I like to stand and whiteboard stuff. But I already decide what my next clarity break's going to be on for 2 weeks from now. Because when you do that,
interesting,
you're already trying to solve it. It's just I'm trying to solve something either in the business or build out an idea or something's going on personal life. Like, you know, what do the kids need? How do I better show up for them? But if I decide what that's going to be 2 weeks down the road, subconsciously I'm already trying to solve it before I even get to the clarity break.
Yeah.
As opposed to just showing up and starting to think about something.
So. Yeah.
And when are you doing your journaling?
So I do everything on this Microsoft Surface machine right here, and I use this thing called Evernote. Mm-hmm. And I have a 5-minute journal that is a morning journal and an evening journal, and then I have just a journal that's just free-flowing stream of consciousness, whatever comes to mind. And I never miss a day, and I'm doing those wherever. I mean, like – the evening journal, usually I'll read Maya a story and then wait for her to go to sleep and then I'll journal. And that the prompts at the end of the day are so important. So one of them is what's a problem you're trying to solve. One is what's a lesson you learned today.
I mean, I bought that journal book that, and I don't even know where it is now. I think I cracked it. I don't know. You had said that there's kind of like already preformed.
Oh, the 5-minute journal.
That's the Tim Ferriss
one. That's what it was. Yeah. And I bought it. I don't know where it is.
You got to use it.
But, I don't know where it is anymore.
But that's actually, I mean, because I lose things all the time, I can't have paper journals.
Right. So you're.
I need everything encrypted and in the cloud and Evernote. And then the morning prompts are equally important, right? Because they start with things that you're grateful for, and then there's like some affirmations in there, and then you're if you only got three things done today, what should they be? And then I also have a prompt in there to look at my weekly journal, right? The weekly planner for your week, because I'm not going to remember what my goals for the week were.
Yeah.
So I have to tell myself in the morning, this is where you look at your weekly planner, and then only after that do you put your three crucial results in.
I didn't even open my to-do list today.
It's OCD, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also a recognition that my brain will do its own thing if I don't focus it on prompts, Anywho.
Good for you, Alex.
The last question is the Christie. So Christie is
stripper.
Yeah,
maybe we don't know.
He does listen to our podcast.
It's possible. She certainly she dresses really well.
Yeah, she could have been a stripper back in her day.
She looks good.
Yeah.
Christie publishes a really good magazine called Neighbors,
which we are in this episode. Yeah.
Or this current edition.
Shout out to her. Maybe we could say that right now. Christie George. She did a great article in Neighbors magazine about the podcast. So thank you so much. Shout out. The phone's ringing off the hook.
Right. So we gave Christie an honorary lightning round question. And it's called The Christie.
Okay.
All right. Great. So you ready for The Christie?
Let's do it.
If you could interview any person in history, living or dead, who would it be?
Hmm. I lived for a while down in Charlottesville, Virginia, in high school for a few years, and I became obsessed with Thomas Jefferson.
What he
built UVA and
Monticello,
whatever you refer to that as. I literally toured that about a dozen times as a high school kid on my own because I wanted to hear every different tour guide.
Yeah.
I find him fascinating.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at his tombstone, he was president of the United States, but he actually ordered on his tombstone what was most valuable to him. It wasn't the presidency. It was founding of University of Virginia.
Hmm.
So I just find it fascinating. And this whole thing with the slaves and like how that all worked. I became a big history buff down there. I had a great history teacher in high school. So
the Jefferson Memorial, Jake and I were just there. The quotes that they chose for his memorial are mesmerizing.
Yeah.
They're so prophetic.
Yeah.
He was a really like shrewd negotiator too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like a really, good politician and diplomat and interesting dude. I agree. All right. Our lightning round is officially done.
And seen.
Hey, Ron, what do you got in the hopper? What do you got coming up?
Well, I don't know if you guys saw it. We just had, when the Browns fired all their coaches, we put out a press release saying we will help the Cleveland Browns free of charge with your culture issues. And actually Channel 3 picked it up. So Dave Chudowski picked it up, came out and did a story. And so we've been getting a few phone calls around that stuff.
That's awesome.
I think I more got banned from that stadium than actually got it invited
Please.
To come and help.
They need people to come. They're not getting rid of anybody. Trust me.
So I don't think that's coming anytime soon. We're going to be doing some work with the Bowler School of Business over at JCU. And we're loving working with the small to mid-sized businesses here in Northeast Ohio. There's a hotbed of entrepreneurship in this area, and not a lot of people know that's what, our backbone is. And so we've built out this Traction Leadership Center in Westlake over by Crocker Park, and that's really where, our acronym for that is TLC. It's really where our leadership teams are coming for a little TLC because, you can get beat down at the end of a quarter if you don't come up for air. And so We might be open to one of those on the east side as well.
Where can people learn about that and about Culture Shock?
Yeah, just cultureshock.com.
Without the K. Yeah.
That's probably the best place to go. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. I'm sure we can get you those. But
awesome.
I'm a low fact finder, so I don't have those on me.
Oh, I've got them all right here. I got your LinkedIn.
I bet we have the exact same number.
Probably do.
Yeah. Molly, what are you working on?
So proud and excited to announce that my countertop time dropped today. Did you watch it at all?
Congratulations. No, I've been...
It's my little show. Since no one's going to give me my own show, I'm just going to create my own show myself.
Nice.
And I brought my high school freshman winter formal date was my first guest.
Wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
Pictures and all. Yes. He actually owns a wine tasting room in downtown Willoughby now, so we tasted wine. And
was John there when this happened?
He was not, but his wife was there. The feelings are over. But a shout out to Eddie. He was great. And we'll make sure everybody likes Countertop Time on Facebook, and they'll come out every Monday just for your enjoyment. I'm just sitting 30 minutes with somebody shooting the shit,
okay.
as what I say. And hopefully maybe someday Alex will join me. Ron, you're always invited.
Thank you.
It's at my house.
Yeah.
Because I spent so much on my countertop that I'd like to show it off. And you're welcome to join me, Alex.
Thanks, Molly.
So, so that's what's happening.
Where do people find Countertop Time?
They can go to Countertop Time on Facebook and like it there.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
We have a website coming, but that's Facebook, Countertop Time. Or I have a YouTube channel, Countertop Time.
Okay.
Yeah. And you, Alex Gertzberg?
Well, I'm very excited because Cover My Six now has a startup version. So, Ron, Cover My Six is a service that we have at our law firm that audits small and mid-sized businesses in the six areas most likely to get them sued.
Oh,
right?
Nice.
Customer relations, vendor relations, employees, shareholders, technology, and insurance. Right?
Very cool.
So 18 years of practicing law, almost all the litigation that I've ever been involved in, which is hundreds of cases, have fallen into one or more of those six categories. So businesses can use us and do use us to audit themselves in those six areas, and we help them stay out of court.
What's a startup?
So the startup version, because there isn't a lot to audit there, small companies don't have a lot.
Startup meaning the business is a startup.
Yeah. So what we do now with startups.
Sounds like there's a good collaboration right here.
Yeah, is we give them a custom binder of all the legal documents that they're going to need in those six areas. And they have a lot of really good lawyer-proofed provisions that help them stay out of trouble. Employee handbooks, customer agreements, shareholder agreements, things like that. So, yeah, that's the Cover My Six startup package.
Every time you go to say Cover My Six, I always think Cover My Ass.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Then it's working.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's what it does. That's its point. Yeah. So if you go to covermysix.com, you'll see the new startup package there. I'm pretty excited about it.
Love it. And does that come with you as well? Or,
yeah, so it's all custom made. So there are litigators who prepare it just for your business. And you have a good amount of face time with lawyers to answer your questions and then help you guide each other in creating and then implementing these documents.
Love it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. And of course, if you want to follow the best podcast ever, you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify,
iTunes,
thebestpodcastever.com, Facebook, iTunes.
Leave us a review on iTunes, folks. Really important. Do us a favor. Do Ron a favor.
Yes.
Do us a solid.
Leave us a review on iTunes. That's really important.
Is it?
It is important.
Okay.
Yeah. And send us feedback and tell your friends.
Yes, this was great, Ron.
Thank you very much for having us. This was awesome.
You've done quite a few podcasts. How did we rank? Are we with them? Yeah, great.
I mean, okay. I love the banter. The banter.
How much we hate each other.
Yes, you can tell. You guys are brother and sister.
We do say that. Yeah, we do say that.
That's awesome.
I'm the Catholic version, and Alex is the Jewish version.
I'm the smarter, better looking sibling.
I'm the kinder and wiser, but it's true. Okay. Okay, well, that's good. We stacked up with the rest because he's got quite a resume of podcasts. So I was very nervous about that.
Those are all the second best podcast ever.
Correct.
We are the best podcast ever. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Ron, thank you very much.
Alex, have a great day.
You too, Molly. Awesome. See you guys next time.
See ya.